Okay, so welcome everyone to the second of UPA's Graduation and Beyond series, postdoc and fellowship focus today. My name is Keely Lundy. I'm a third year doc student at the University of Utah and the current student rep on the UPA board. And I'm joined here by Wing.
Hi everyone, I'm a second year doc student at the University of Utah. And yeah, I'm the student rep elect.
And we'll be kind of going back and forth hosting today's talk. I want to thank everyone who is here today, especially our panelists, and also thank those who submitted questions in advance for this. We'll get to those later. This is being recorded. We'll be uploading this and sharing it with those who RSVP'd for the webinar, and we'll be sharing it on the UPA webpage as an audio recording, so kind of like a podcast style. But first, let's go over our agenda. So I'm going to give a little background on our two guests today, and then we'll jump into those pre-submitted questions, and then we'll provide opportunity to those who are attending today for a quick Q&A session. So first, I want to introduce Dr. Janice Pompa, who's a licensed clinical psychologist. And graduated from Brigham Young University in 1976 with a bachelor's degree in psychology and a minor in Spanish-speaking American studies. She graduated from Michigan State University with an MA in 1978 and PhD in 1983 in clinical psych, with a minor in neuropsychology. In addition to providing clinical services in private practice, Dr. Pompa has been a member of the clinical faculty in the departments of Ed Psych and psychiatry at the University of Utah for over 25 years. She currently teaches and supervises psychotherapy and neuropsychological assessments with graduate students in psychology and educational psychology, and supervises other psychologists in the community. She's been a director of the University of Utah's Educational Assessment and Student Support Clinic for 25 years, serving the children and adolescents of the Intermountain West. Dr. Pompa has published numerous articles and book chapters pertaining to the assessment and treatment of children with brain injuries and other neurological disorders. Dr. Pompa is well known in the psychological community for her wide range of expertise in many areas of professional practice, knowledge of testing and assessment practices, service to children and adolescents of ethnic and gender minority in Salt Lake City. This summer, she received a presidential citation from the American Psychological Association for her service to multicultural communities. And Wing, would you like to introduce our next guest?
Sure, Dr. Christina Cottle Feldman. I'm getting that right, Feldman. Earned her doctorate of philosophy from the University of Utah's Educational Psychology Program. She completed her APA accredited internship with UNI, where she received generalist training while enhancing her knowledge of concepts related to autism spectrum disorder. Dr. Feldman also participated in the UR LEND program as a full-time and an autism enhancement trainee. Prior to graduate school, Dr. Feldman gained undergraduate and post-bac experience at the University of California Davis Mind Institute. Her current research interests include preparing adolescents with autism spectrum disorder and their families for transition to adulthood, life outcomes for adults with autism spectrum disorder and co-occurring psychiatric conditions affecting individuals with autism spectrum disorder. She's committed to advocating for individuals and families impacted by autism spectrum disorder, as well as advancing the field by educating graduate students, medical students, residents, and fellows. Dr. Feldman provides services at the University of Utah's Huntsman Mental Health Institute's Autism Spectrum Disorder Clinic. She's in the process of starting a small private practice, Neurodiverse Psychological Services. Thank you both for coming.
Yeah, thank you both. And before the questions, I just wanted to give an opportunity for Dr. Pompa and Dr. Feldman to identify where they did their postdoc or fellowship and kind of what it was like. So either of you can go first.
Well, since I'm so much older, I can provide the historical perspective on this. I did my postdoctoral residency at Primary Children's Medical Center in 1983, and that's what brought me to Salt Lake.
Very cool. Mm-hmm.
I did my postdoc at the University of Utah. I was a research and clinical position that we kind of created for me in the Department of Psychiatry. So I worked in the autism clinic for my clinical work, and then I worked with research faculty for my research portion.
Very cool. Okay. Awesome. Well, now we'll transition to the pre-submitted questions, and I'll hand it over to Wing.
Awesome. Yeah. So before the talk started, we were all talking a little bit about the postdoc and fellowship experience and how for a lot of folks, it kind of just feels like you're going out there and trying to figure out things on your own. So a number of these questions are geared towards like resources or ways that students can kind of research opportunities for postdoc and fellowships. So the first question is, what are some online resources that we can use to search for available postdocs and or fellowship opportunities?
Well, again, the historical perspective, I searched for my postdoc, you know, over 40 years ago, and there was really nothing back then, okay? And there's a lot more that students can take advantage of nowadays because APA has several websites that pertain to postdoc opportunities and how to find them. And then, as you may know, you know, APIC has the UPPD that lists all of the postdocs, or most of them, that students can go to look for a postdoc that fits their needs. Also, APIC has postdoc selection webinars that you can go to and listen to them talk about different sorts of topics with regard to selecting your postdoc. And they have one, in fact, this Thursday. Not this Thursday, but September 30th. And I was very interested to see that they have a limit of 500 attendees. Oh my gosh, seriously. Wow. It says right there, limited to 500. Like, wow, okay. So going back to APA, they also have a little video where they help students develop a 5-step individual plan about how to pick a postdoc and how to go about applying and that sort of thing. And then the other postdoc I have experience in is in the neuropsychology field, and that's a whole different ball of wax. They have a match process, and they actually, if you believe Division 40, which is Division of Clinical Neuropsychology for APA, they have a whole system where you can get a mentor to walk you through. And that is highly advised if you're looking for a neuropsych postdoc, because that's, it's more difficult. The good news is that I did read that there are more postdocs out there than there are applicants. So an applicant would have a good chance of getting a postdoc right now. What do you think, Christina?
Yeah, I was gonna say too that some of the more like specialized professional organizations have listings for these too. So I remember when I was looking for my postdoc, I wanted one more specific to autism. I was kind of geographically limited in what I was looking for, but I remember looking at like the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, like their listservs, they have some listings, like the International Society for Autism Research, they had some listings. So if you want to be more specialized, I was looking for either within APA or other organizations, kind of more specialized tracks, you can look for some. And then just some, I think just programs or like kind of more larger medical institutions or academic medical centers will post them occasionally in their training sections of their websites.
Yeah. And another thing I wanted to mention too is that after the postdoc selection process is over, there are usually leftover postdocs that did not have anybody that they selected. And so they'll post those. And because I belong to the pediatric neuropsych listserv, there was one this week from Montefiore Medical Center in New York, where they'll just put them up there. And even if you didn't get a postdoc, you have a second chance to apply in that process.
Yeah, it's nice. They seem overall, I mean, the nice thing about the postdoc process, we were saying how earlier it's unstructured and that can cause more difficulty, but because it's more unstructured and flexible, it's also nice where like if you miss the window, or need to start late. It's not like APIC internships where you have to start at the date. It's really, it's whenever you sign up kind of, and you can set your start date. So I had friends who, they didn't have an APIC or APA postdoc. They just created their own, like myself, and they took 2 months off after internship and then started. So there's more flexibility in what you can do, which is nice.
Yeah, thanks for that. I'm hearing that there's a lot of different online resources. And in particular, if you have a specialty, maybe considering joining those organizations, those divisions that have a specialty. Yeah. Connected to that was one question about contacting faculty members or faculty that you might want to work with for a postdoc or fellowship. And the students would just like some tips on how to reach out to them, whether that's email or some other way to network with them.
Well, I think email works really well. With me, texting works the best because most of us have our phones on us most of the time. And you should pick somebody to ask who's knowledgeable about the postdoc opportunities in your field. My experience is I had no idea what I was doing. And so I picked people who had no idea what they were doing. And so they weren't all that helpful. But yeah, I mean, if you know what you want, you know what you want to go for, pick somebody who's either had experience in that process or knows. And if you have somebody who's actually running a postdoc and they're familiar with, you know, the requirements and that sort of thing, that'd be an ideal person to ask.
Yeah, I would say use your networks. Use other, I mean, we have huge networks from either your doctoral program and then your internship as well. I met a lot of people. With other students looking for, you know, on internship interviews and everything, we kind of saw each other around and they were great contacts. So at one point when I was looking for a postdoc, I just contacted them saying, hey, what are you doing? And they helped me get in touch with somebody else. And so I think just using your networks to A, contact faculty. So if, like, you know, somebody who knows the faculty, seeing if you can get an introduction email going, that's always really helpful. I know myself, I'm more likely to respond early, faster if there's somebody else, there's a connection there. But then also just using your networks to, you know, find more people, like, how do I contact this person? What do they like? Or when's the best time to reach them? Things like that. So
the best thing is if you know somebody on your faculty or on some other faculty who knows somebody who's on faculty at the postdoc.
Yeah, exactly.
We do this a lot when we admit students to our program, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, so-and-so wrote this letter and so-and-so called me and said this and so-and-so said that Christina was awesome. You know, we really take that seriously.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that they do too.
I was going to say too, I mean, I know we're talking about postdocs, but anyone looking for internships, internship is also a very network-based process. I remember when I applied, I did not think it was network-based and I did not get a couple of interviews. And I knew people there. And later on, they're like, why didn't you email me to make the connection? I was like, I don't know. I just figured people don't do that. And they were like so mad at me because of it. But that's also, again, like anytime you have a connection, I think it's really helpful to connect with the people. Just your names floating around or they read their applications like, oh, I've heard of this person before. It just really, really helpful.
Yeah, so I'm hearing that like networking and utilizing the people you know and the faculty you know are going to be really helpful for the process. I know some of the students were curious around the timeline for that. I know we talked about how at the tail end, you know, once applications are finished and you're receiving news back, that's kind of varied. But I think some students were wondering about when to start searching and when to start applying for some of these postdoc or fellowships. Is it around the time that you kind of start internship? When would that process be, or what advice would you give to some students?
Well, the things I've read have said that no later than fall, you know, you need to be looking because most of the application deadlines are December and January. And then I think the deadline for notification is February 27th or something like that. So, you know, you don't want to do anything at the last minute for sure.
Yeah. My recollection was I started internship and then 2 months later, people are like, what are you doing for postdoc? So it happens very quickly where you're kind of barely settled into your internship position and it starts to come up. Because yeah, those deadlines are December, November, December, I think. And then there's a quick turnaround.
Yeah, I'll say for the people listening and for the people here, I gave a very deep sigh when you said in the fall.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
No, it's
all I mean, the thing is too, it's flexible, right? So, I mean, you might limit yourself by not looking immediately, but you also, there are other opportunities, I think, out there, so.
Yeah, and I think connected to that is kind of a wondering about what are some of the more highly desired postdoc skills, especially since you are just, you know, starting internship, wondering if that's kind of a different thing in terms of what skills you might want to highlight in a postdoc versus internship versus graduate applications. And the question attached to that is, how do we most effectively sell ourselves for these highly sought postdoc and fellowship positions?
Well, that's a really good question. And I think it depends on whether you're going for a postdoc or a fellowship and what the emphasis is, because, you know, Christina was research. She specifically wanted research as a part of hers. If you're going to a clinical postdoc, of course, they're going to be looking at your clinical experience in that particular area. You know, I went to primary and I did a neuropsych, pediatric neuropsych postdoc at primary. And so, of course, they're going to be looking at my experience, you know, how many test instruments I've given and what the breadth of my training was and that sort of thing. So, yeah, clinical experience seems to be really important.
Yeah.
A long time ago, maybe not so long ago, but some internships would actually shut out school psychology students because they thought that they did not have that kind of training, particularly in psychotherapy. So we've worked really hard to try to provide those sort of experiences so they can apply wherever they want and have a resume and a vita that would be competitive with anybody from any program.
I think that's changed even the last couple of years. Like since I did an internship, I've heard of more programs opening up to school psych. Good. Yeah, because there were a handful that did not allow, they just didn't want applications, and they've since opened them up, which is awesome.
Yeah, I know Valley Mental Health was like that. I don't know if it still is. Do you know?
I don't think we're allowed to apply to those ones. No. I don't think school psych is, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen it pop up in my searches for like Utah.
So narrow-minded.
Yeah, I think what helped me was having a background in the area. Some of my friends and colleagues who applied for a variety of postdoc positions or fellowships, some of the training sites wanted strong experience, like whatever area, so they could be independent. Because the nice thing about having a postdoc is that they really do take more limited supervision is the idea. But some programs really want that to be your new area of emphasis, where you're kind of green in it. And so they really want this big training experience. And so they want you to be independent, but they also really want you to learn their methods and their techniques. So there's that kind of fine line between being proficient, but also needing to learn a lot. So.
Yeah, still embracing that role of learner and yet affirming your competency at the postdoctoral level.
Right, exactly.
I just want to say something kind of interesting here is that when I postdoced at primary, you know, I had the neuropsych experience for sure, but I also had the opportunity to have all kinds of experiences that I would have never gotten anywhere else, I think. For example, I was able to sit in on a couple of neurosurgeries, which was amazing. I know, right?
Yeah.
The first laser surgery they did on a brain tumor was on one of my clients, and I got to sit in on that whole surgery, and I thought it would be like TV and everything, and it kind of wasn't. It was much more informal, and when it was about like 8 hours, and when I was done, my supervisor was like, wow, you really held out really well. And then that night I went to a party and I got out of the car and I threw up in the driveway. It was pretty stressful. But yeah, you can have a lot of unique experiences. And primary is awesome because it's an Intermountain Trauma Center for kids. So you see kids from all over the Intermountain West with disorders you're never going to see for the rest of your career. So that was amazing.
I was going to say kind of along with that, I think being in a academic medical center or a center like Intermountain, which they're academic medical too, I consider them that way. They do a lot of research and stuff, but if you have a number of trainees, so you have a program that's also associated with like a medical school or medical trainees or residents, their fellows, I think the training opportunities are more expansive. And so you do have more opportunities for that. And they're used to having trainees just pop in different scenarios. And so I think what I've heard is those programs, there's a lot of opportunity for a diverse range of training experience. It's really cool.
Yeah, so really trying to take advantage of the opportunities when they come up. Mm-hmm. Maybe sometimes taking that 8 hour watching the surgeries and sometimes choosing other things. I think for the remaining questions, I'm going to hand it over to Kaylee right now.
Yeah, I had something that kind of just popped up. This isn't a pre-submitted question, so I'm going like improvise. But Dr. Feldman, you were talking about like how postdocs are kind of variable with like, do they want postdocs with experience in that area or do they want them kind of green? And I feel like what I'm hearing a lot for internships is that they want somebody who is coming in willing to learn, has some experience with it, but really isn't an expert. So with postdocs, like when should you be kind of like asking those questions like in the interview, or should you be doing that kind of research on the forefront of like what they're looking for?
I would probably do some of the research on the forefront. I think you get a sense of what they're looking for based on their description and everything like that. But I would start early on because I think that also determines what you want. You know, I wanted a postdoc that was very specific in an area that I was already kind of in. And so I wanted training and mentorship, but I was still wanting to be really specific. And with the clinical portion, I knew I wanted to be specific and really to learn more, but really just get those hours into work. And so I think discussing that with them ahead of time. And the nice thing about a lot of postdocs is that, again, because it's informal, you talk to people beforehand, especially these ones that you kind of create, or I think APIC and APA ones are a little bit different. But the ones that are just posted on that are more informal, not part of that match process or that formalized process, you talk to the people who are seeking you more so. There's just more informal, they give you more information. And so asking those kinds of questions is typically acceptable, I think.
Okay. That sounds good. I thought it was interesting the different kind of like what they're wanting is so variable across internships and postdocs. But so one of the questions was like, what are some tips for securing a postdoc or fellowship with an APIC like fellowship postdoc sites? And I know we've already mentioned kind of using that network and connecting with kind of the people that you're interested in working with. Do you guys have any other tips for securing those?
I would watch all the videos on APA and the APIC websites and read everything that they talk about because they give you tips there. And they walk you, the APA website walks you through a 5-step program as to how to get the postdoc that you want. And so I would take advantage of all of those things.
Yeah, I'm going to add to that.
Yeah,
definitely.
No, this is the first time I'm hearing about it. And I'm excited to kind of go explore that. And I think a lot of our listeners too, who are on internship will really gain a lot from APA's website and their resources. So kind of following up with that, like, and I know this is based on the site, but like, what do you think supervisors typically are looking for in their postdoc or fellow?
I think Christina talked a little bit about that a minute ago. You know, a fair amount of independence, but not complete independence, but also not complete dependence, because they feel like, okay, you should be past this. You should know, you know, what needs to be done here, but we also want to offer you training opportunity. So you also have to advocate for yourself as far as what you want to learn and in what settings you want to learn it and things like that, because you're almost like a colleague, almost. So you sort of have to step up to the plate with that.
Yeah.
So speaking of colleagues, that kind of goes into the next questions about like securing jobs, right? Like what if you really like your postdoc site or your fellowship site? When should you start having those questions with your supervisor? Or if you do have the question and they're like, nope, sorry, we don't have any opportunities. Like, what do you do then?
I think you should ask that question during the hiring process. So okay. I think knowing whether or not there's opportunities. Because, you know, when you're getting to the postdoc phase, you're getting to this phase where you're kind of sick of moving. You want to be more settled. At least a lot of people are, right? They kind of, it's the last hurdle. And to some people, a lot of my colleagues really wanted to land somewhere. And they did find postdocs, again, more geographically limited areas. And so I think asking those questions at the very beginning, like how many people, and even on internship, right? So how many people from internship go on to a postdoc here? How many people get hired here? What is that process like? So you have an idea going into it. But there's a similar timeline, I think, to finding a job, is that you start your postdoc and then a couple minutes in the fall period, you start asking those questions and they start thinking about it. Some places also want to have an idea because they set their budgets in like January, February. So if they're going to open a spot for you or continue spots, then they need to know that ahead of time. So they start planning for that earlier, that December period, and then want to solidify things. So I think starting to talk about it early is really important and looking for other options.
I think a lot of times it's not that formal. It's sort of like a process. It's like you're working there, they're getting to know you, you're getting to know them. It's kind of this mutual understanding that, gosh, we really like you, you know, maybe we could find something for you. And then it's kind of your choice. Yeah, I'd really like that. Or no, I'm moving to Montana, you know, or whatever. That it's sort of like a mutual understanding rather than a really formal type of process of, could I work here? Could I not? Could you create a position for me? So
I think you ideally have really natural relationships with your mentors and your supervisors, and that just comes up kind of naturally. I mean, I agree that it's not this formal process. But also the thing that to consider too is licensing, and when you're planning to be licensed, that also is a factor in everything. So just thinking about how, you know, when you want to get licensed and, you know, go take the H2LP and all of that process is a factor too.
Yeah, that's one of our questions. Well, we can ask it now. So for the H2LP, when did you guys take it? What was that like? And do you recommend doing like the studying and preparing to take it right after your postdoc or fellowship?
Well, it's all different now, you know, because back then they offered it twice a year and you had to go downtown to the Heber B. Wells building and take it with a whole bunch of other people. You know, it was like in October and April, and those are your times. And then the bureau manager could not tell you, and you weren't supposed to ask her, but I knew her. And so I called her up and she said, well, I can't tell you, but I think you're going to have a very Merry Christmas. And I was like, yes, because, you know, we have to make our plans.
Yeah.
So it's now, you know, it's totally different. You can take the ECCC right after you finish. And apparently UPA is introducing legislation to allow you to take the ECCC before you even graduate. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you don't have to spend that extra year as a psych resident, you know, spending your own money, potentially paying for a supervisor so that you can get on your feet right away.
I think it's always really important though to look at, if you ever think about moving somewhere else, like always make sure you look at their licensing requirements. I mean, I pulled up licensure requirements for a bunch of states I will probably never move to, but I just wanted to know what was required. And that's me to consider of, like, I did not need a postdoc, but I wanted to make sure I had that year so that I could say I had that year in case anything came up. But I think it also depends on like your timing, but and also your bandwidth. When I finished internship, I was like, I think I had just finished dissertation, so I was not ready to take the test. I actually kind of rushed into the test eventually because my postdoc, I originally said I wanted to be like 3 years for postdoc, and I think 6 months in, I was like, I'm done with this, I wasn't getting the research training I wanted to get, and so. I decided to just go full clinical instead. And they were like, we'll happily hire you full time. And so they gave me opportunity to be faculty and it was great. So it was a great transition, but it meant I had to get licensed and fairly quickly. And so I very quickly decided I did not feel as prepared to take the test as I wanted to. But I ended up taking it, I think I took it in like May, and that was a okay timeline. I almost passed out when I read the score though, because it was, I did not think I was going to pass. I just did not study for as long, and I literally had to sit down in the hallway and put my head between my legs.
Well, I do want to say something about that, because many years ago when I was on the UPA board, I went to a meeting of CDSPP in Savannah, and they presented some literature about the timing of when you take the EPPP. The sooner you take it after you're done with your program, the better. The people who put it off for years, they had a much lower pass rate.
I would not go past a year for sure. I would take it within that first year, hands down. It's just more of like, if you feel like going for it and just finishing it right after. I mean, I think Denise is right. I think, and I remember reading those articles and feeling behind, but the sooner the better. Because you just also, you get into a different mode of life as the other thing too. As life changes and it's harder to get yourself to study and sit down, because you have to study a lot. I mean, it's a lot of preparation, and you know, talk to people who are also taking it. I think there are a lot of study materials out there, but there are also a lot of study materials floating around. Not that I did that or anything. I didn't borrow anyone's materials.
Of course you didn't.
No, but make sure, again, network, talk to people, create study groups. I think the sooner the better for sure. There's that literature that says that, but I also think it's just easier if you just do it.
And I totally agree. You should be in a study group and you should take the practice exams, because yes. I was in a study group with Elaine and with Sherry Reynolds. Mm-hmm. And we took the exams and our final scores are very close to how we were scoring on the practice exams up until the time we took it. So it's really good preparation to do that.
The only other thing to consider is I had some friends who could not take it right away, because if they got, it was tricky where they got licensed, they passed and got licensed while on their postdoc. They then had to switch off their postdoc and it kind of messed with things. Mm. So I think it was just a limited number of sites, but something to consider. Well, I think it was a pay thing or a licensure. I can't remember what it was, but just talk to your site about when other people do it at that location.
That's a good point. And we do have an EPPP, just a little shout out for it, a webinar next week with Dr. Michelle Miranda. And I think this is really good in talking with your supervisor and what other students or postdocs have done. Really good advice. Last question. I just kind of wanted to open it up to hear about your postdoc fellowship experiences. Like, what kind of responsibilities did you have? Were you supervising, assessing, therapy? And maybe some things that you wish you had had more experience with before jumping into like a job and that sort of thing.
Well, I didn't supervise anyone. Back then, pediatric neuropsychology, I mean, just the number of people who are in it were so low that I don't have any students to supervise or anything like that. But I practiced almost like an independent practitioner, but I had supervision once a week and, the input of my supervisor, but I had my own clients. I, you know, made my own schedule. I did my own, traveling to schools, everything. You know, there was very little sort of structure or you will do this or you will do that. There was a lot of independence in my postdoc, and most of the learning that I had, we did have seminars, but most of the learning that I received was on the job just from seeing the kids. And it was amazing. I would recommend it to anybody. What do you think, Christina?
Yeah. Similarly, I was very independent. So I was split 50-50 research and clinical. Like you hear, my clinical time ate into my research time. but clinically, I was pretty much independent. I did supervise a couple of graduate students under my supervisors. Like, it was a supervising situation, which I really liked. I liked that experience of getting a chance to supervise other people and train and everything. But I had my own clients. I did therapy. I did assessments. I helped run groups. Made my own schedule, everything like that. I was very independent and then had that supervision time, obviously. For my research portion, I chose it because, again, location, but also who I was working with at the time. And what I what ended up having making me leave my postdoc was that I was getting the same training as I had previously. So I had worked with these people during graduate school and I loved them dearly, but I wasn't getting additional or different training. And that's a piece that I really wanted on postdoc. And that's why I ended up leaving earlier, technically, because I wanted additional training experience. And that's something I looked at. I wanted something new. And I wasn't quite getting it. And so that was a factor. But I loved what I created. It was a great opportunity and helped lead me into my job and everything. So it was awesome.
It sounds like, you guys had a lot of independence, which is just desirable. And it's kind of like real life job or your career, right? Like you're making your own schedule. And so I think it sets you up for success later to have something like that. Well, thank you so much for being here. Those were all of the pre-submitted questions. And now I'd like to open it up for Q&A. Paige, our only attendee, do you have any questions for Dr. Feldman or Dr. Pompa?
Not really. I mean, I'm only in my second year, so I wanted to just kind of, coming into this, not really knowing anything about postdocs and fellowships and things like that. So this was really helpful for me, but yeah, I don't have any specific questions about anything yet.
Great. Okay. And that's okay. Dr. Pompa, Dr. Feldman, are you okay if I share your email with kind of the people who RSVP'd?
Absolutely.
Okay, cool. Just if they have questions,
No, go ahead.
Oh yeah, and just for the people who weren't able to attend, I know they would probably want your contact as they're kind of going into that phase of postdoc and fellowships, so.
Yeah. I was gonna say, and I thought that popped in my head, Paige, when you were talking about being a second year, is that when I went, internship and postdoc seems really far away when you're early in graduate school, but I did find what was really helpful was to just have an idea, like one night, have a glass of wine, peruse the APA APIC internship site, and just see like what looks appealing to you and kind of have an idea of what they're looking for. Because that was one thing that really helped me was that I knew what I wanted, or I had an idea of what I wanted or where I could apply. And some of them had different requirements. So some really wanted a higher number of adult evaluations and some didn't care at all. So like, but I made sure that I had those experiences and I was able to say I had, 35 adult evals or whatever it was on the application. And I also, some of them wanted more therapy time. So again, it seems far away, but just having a general idea of what you might be looking at can be really helpful as you kind of create your training experiences as you head towards that.
Good to know. I will do that.
Well, thank you so much for being here, and I'm going to stop the recording now.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.